Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, bringing you our opinion and our commentary on today's economic and political events for Wednesday, April 23rd, 2014. Good day, Mr. Addis.
Well, Ms. Melody, what you doing today?
Working.
Working.
Working. It's good to be working. It's good to be working, people buying gold and silver, and, you know, we're making sure that we provide great prices, great shipping here at Discount Gold and Silver. Great service. Can't beat it. There's no place you can beat it, so they better give us a call. Beat the steps to the phone. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. Should we beat right to the gold and silver prices today, Alfred?
Like the beat, beat, beat of the tom-tom.
There we go.
All right.
Well, there's no beating to get too excited about gold today, but I'm always excited about gold because every time it's at these levels, there are just better buying opportunities. And you know what? I got some numbers. These were released a month or so ago, and you know we've talked about them before. We're going to talk about them again. And we're going to remind people. It's only the people here in America that are not buying gold and silver. They don't have a clue what's going on. And those who do have a clue, they have to have something hit them in the head before they say, well, I guess I need to accumulate some more. But so we'll talk about that a little bit later on in the program. Gold was up $1.20 today, $1,285. You have silver up 5 cents today at $19.54. Platinum was up two at $14.10, and palladium was up a dollar at $789. And the USDX today, $79.86, down 4.04. And crude oil, $101.50, down 26. Paper markets were up most of the day, gleefully. They were, bragging about their six-day winning streak. Not so much today. But barely any moves. You had the Dow down 12 at 16,501, the NASDAQ down 34 at 41,26, and the S&P down 4 at 18,75. 10-year yield dumped down below 70, 2.69, down 0.04. And now it looks like things are heating up again in Ukraine.
Yep, they won't leave it alone.
Russia.
I predicted when we first stumbled into this, it would be over. In short, it'd be quickly over. But apparently, the morons aren't going to let that happen. They're going to keep aggravating the situation until somebody finally does something really stupid. And then we can have some sort of a real confrontation, get a bunch of people killed, blow up a bunch of buildings, bomb some cities, make some money for the munition manufacturers. I don't know. Somebody should have just looked at this and said, look, the Ukraine is ultimately a failed state. It doesn't have enough brains or capacity to hold itself together in a meaningful sense. The Russian people were annexed, at least in the Crimea, I think 1954, thereabouts. Let them go home. Just do it and be done with it. Could have just done it. Not going to let it go. They're going to have to get people killed. And now, of course, you got the Russians. They in the eastern part of Ukraine. I don't know who, if they are being motivated by Russia or if it's just their own saying, Crimea's out of here. We want to leave too. If they had any sense, they just shut up for a while. Let this thing go. Come back, revisit in 12 months, 24 months, whatever. But the Ukraine itself, the nation, it's incapable of providing a national sense of identity for the Russian people that are also living in the Ukraine. One way or another, the Russian people don't like it there, and it was a serious mistake. It was a serious mistake for them to think they would. They haven't assimilated. What are they going to do? So.
And you also wonder Ukraine's view, their strength, where their strength is coming from, mainly because of the U.S., knowing that they're there with sanctions ready to, you know, do what is necessary. So they're a little more vocal, a little more, you know, it's kind of like, you know, when you have a lion standing behind you, you know, you might have a tendency to, you know, be a little more bold in there.
Yeah, I get that, but there's nobody standing up for Ukraine. They need to understand that. The United States isn't going to do anything meaningful, and if it does, in the unlikely event that it really does, where will the war be fought? Here in the United States, over there in Russia, or in the Ukraine? I mean, the Ukraine, hooray, hooray, let's make a war out of this, and it'll be fought right there in their own front yard. This can't be good. The people, somebody in the Ukraine ought to just say, look, this is maybe an unfortunate, unpleasant situation, but let's not make it worse. And that's what's happening.
And the sad thing about it is I saw a commentary on another website. And it was a comment about 1914. People thought there would be no real war because of the confidence, the victory would be quick. And in 2014, people think there will be no real war because of their confidence that the nuclear dissuasion makes it impossible. And so could we actually have a World War III? I mean, these things have a tendency to get out of control. They have a tendency to, you know, the thing from left field, you know, when something happens, anything can happen. And
black swan event where no one, something stupid happens. You know, what
and
we're
it just and it escalates, and you say it's not going to be fought here, but who knows? We don't know. Not in today's world.
No, we don't know, but you can guarantee that if there's going to be war, the first country to be destroyed will be Ukraine.
Ukraine, yes.
All right. Whether there are other countries destroyed remains to be seen, but Ukraine, if there's going to be war, and the people ought to just get their heads out of their hindquarters and just say, look, enough. All right, let's get on with our lives and let's not be stupid. But life being what it is and vodka being what it is, let's crack open another bottle of vodka and attack. What do you think, Melody?
Well, vodka.
Hit the vodka. Vodka.
Today, the National Association of Realtors said today that the home, or yesterday said that the home sales slipped 0.2% to an annual rate of 4.59 million units, and that is the lowest level since 2012. There is a negative housing momentum, And, of course, they're blaming it on severe weather conditions during the winter months. That's usually when you have severe weather conditions during the winter months. Of course, you can have
They didn't complain about severe. They complained about unseasonable. It was unseasonably cold in the winter. And right now it could be unseasonably windy in the spring. And it could be unseasonably warm in the summer and unseasonably wet in the fall.
But you know what?
It always gets wet, cold, hot, windy, good.
Let's do this. Home resales, okay, rose in the Northeast and Midwest. That is your most severe weather. But fell in the West and the South, where your weather is more mild. So, I mean,
they had unseasonably mild weather down there.
Unseasonably. Oh,
sometimes it's unseasonably cold, and sometimes it's unseasonably mild. And these explain what's happening in the economy.
Okay. But the housing market.
Tea leaves. You can read tea leaves. They also will explain what's happening in the economy.
But the housing market has slowed significantly. Of course, we've seen this as the mortgage rates are beginning to climb a little bit, higher house prices. And from my source, who is a realtor and deals with a lot of foreclosures, he believes that the breaking of the banks will be this foreclosed property. He says the banks are holding on to these properties. He says you have hedge funds that are going out buying up properties, turning them into rentals, creating bonds from the rental income. And that is what is really driving up the prices of the homes. And this is why you even have a positive home market to the degree that it has been. But on the other side of that, I think where it shows that perhaps we're going back into that subprime mortgage business is first-time home buyers have picked up. And again, you know, when you have first-time home buyers, I mean, it was up almost to the point back of 28, I think down by like, I think it was like by 10% difference from when 2008 for first-time home buyers. And, you know, a lot of these first-time home buyers usually will have problems because they're young and they haven't been able to, you know, handle finances as well as folks that are a little bit
older, as we mature people who are noted far and wide for our ability to deal with our financial problems. It's one of the joys of maturity. You don't ever make any mistakes on your finances anymore.
But we're just that smart. But again, these are the signs in the housing market, and they look to the housing market as the you know, the bellwether of our economy is a very major part.
They look to the Dow Jones, and they've got a bunch of indicators that are bellwethers for our economy, but they're all generally manipulated.
Absolutely.
And on a crapola. And the biggest problem with the housing market is that there's a bunch of unsold houses.
Yep.
And the reason, how is it that prices are going up for houses when there's a bunch of houses that have been foreclosed on and are no longer on the market? The truth is they're there. The truth is right now the prices of homes should not be going up. It should be going down until we reach a level where the foreclosed homes are all of a sudden they become, okay, somebody says, yeah, I'll buy that house. It's at a price I can afford. It's at a price that reflects what the real market conditions are. The answer to this problem, this phenomena, is the banks don't want to value the homes according to what market value is. They want to sit there and say, well, we repossessed a house that cost $250,000 and it's still worth $250,000. It's not worth $250,000 in this market. As long as they keep those houses off the market and they restrict the supply of houses, they can artificially support the prices of houses.
The whole thing
is just more smoke and mirrors.
I go to a website, Zillow.com, and it'll list the houses up for sale in your area. And they'll give their estimates. It'll show the house. And it gives you all the details and history of that house, what it was bought for, all the times it was sold and what it was sold for and so forth. And what's interesting is these people, they put their homes on the market. And if they don't sell it in the term of the contract with the realtor, they'll pull it off the market. They'll wait a month. and then they'll go in and turn it back on. So it doesn't look like the house was actually on the market for any length of time.
I get you. And what you're saying is when Zillow makes the report, they will report how long it's been on the market for the most recent period. It could have been on the market for 5 years.
Well, they'll show each time. They'll show each time. So if it's been on
each time?
They show each time. So if the market was, if the house was listed 2 years ago and it wasn't sold after 6 months and they lapsed it for a month and then he came back on for the, they'll show each time that was put on and off the market.
All right.
And it's amazing how many of these homes, if you follow in the Zillow in your area, how many times these homes have been on and off of the market. Now, I've looked around in various markets. It could vary from market to market and so forth. But I also think it's a degree of some of these areas where the housing, they just want to think that their housing prices have gone up. They put a number on it, and they don't want to sell because they're strapped. They, you know, they paid more than, you know, what they can sell it for. And so they're keeping the number high on the house, which shows a higher value for homes that are on the market, but they're not selling for that price. Another interesting article that I wanted to get to before the break today, Al, was the American Postal Workers Union. They organized protests at 50 of the office supply stores, which is Staples, in 27 different states to oppose a deal where the U.S. postal products and services are sold at Staples. And it's not the first time that the postal workers did protest against Staples, but this is the largest so far this year. What's happening, you have 82 Staples stores that have been selling traditional mail services as part of a short-term pilot project that was scheduled through September. And according to the union, the Postal Service plans to expand the pilot project to 1,500 stores nationwide. And the union's beef is that the many post offices are operated by lower-wage Staples staff instead of the U.S. Postal Service employees. And I was told a long time ago from a postal employee that the whole idea of letting the post office fail is so they can privatize it, that they thought that there was somebody already in the wings in from Washington, someone with clout, someone who's, you know, that Congress is intentionally not giving them any funds, puts tough restrictions and tough requirements for their retirement accounts where they have to pay so many years in advance. I mean, no other corporation or entity like the post office is required to do this. And it has strapped the post office, going from a profitable business to one that is deeply in debt and can barely make it strap. So they thought that the reason that the post office wasn't getting any money from Congress was to privatize it.
Well, they've been privatized for like several decades in terms of being owned by private companies. It's not truly it's the United States Postal Service,
they still
but
get
it's
their,
not the post office
they
of
still
the
get
government.
The regulation, they still get the regulations from government, though.
I get you. I understand that. And they're talking, when you say privatize, you may be talking about, essentially, I'm going to coin another word here. I mean, President Bush could do that. He could, I can't think of one of them right now. It's on the tip of my tongue. But President Bush was fairly famous for coining words. I can coin a few myself. Are they working to de-unionize the post office? It's already private. When it goes to Staples, there won't be a union there.
It will be more like a regular retail shop where you can somebody like and the person that comes to my mind. I mean, look at Romney was helped finance the beginning of Staples. So I mean, it would actually go into control of an individual, maybe even China. Maybe there's a buyer from China that they can buy the post office.
Well, we've got commercials that have to be delivered to you folks, so you have to sit there and accept them. It's your job. Listen to those commercials. And we will be back, Melody and I, on Financial Survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
If you have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. Melody, have you finished your calculations?
Yes, I did. I always bring great deals to the program. I always bring coins that are priced, whether their value is very important. And today we're looking at 1 ounce Gold Eagle coins that would sell for $1,353. If you added $92 to that Gold Eagle price, you could upgrade your coin to a mint state 61 $20 gold piece. So remember, folks, we were talking you could buy $20 gold pieces for $100 over a Gold Eagle price of a bullion coin. Today, it's $92. So you're getting great prices. I mean, the spread is actually larger, but I'm keeping these prices low for you. So for $92 spread between a gold bullion coin and a mint state 61 $20 Liberty gold piece for $1,445, give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. It's a great special, a great deal. You can get some quality coins. You can diversify your portfolio. If all you have in your portfolio is gold bullion coins, if you have $20 gold pieces, it's a great time to accumulate at these low prices. What can I say? They're beautiful coins. Plus, this month, for the rest of the month, you're going to be receiving a silver eagle for every trade here at Discount Gold and Silver. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for a weekly newsletter, which we didn't do one for this past month. But
no, for the past week.
For this past week.
Not for the past month. I wish I could get off for a month, but no. I did get off for 1 week. How many years is that I finally had a week off?
Well, now's not the time to go into that. So,
well, I don't remember, but I'm going to look it up. I'm going to check and find out.
All right. Well, prior to the break, we were talking about the Postal Service, and the Postal Service is an independent and self-financed agency. They do get money from the government. They did exhaust a $15 billion loan from taxpayers to make up any of their shortfalls. But they have a mandate to make an annual $5 billion payment for future retiree health care benefits. But because of online and everything else to the mail volume, it certainly has. They're actually sending out 2 billion fewer pieces of mail compared with 2012. So that'll put a little bit of a damper in your...
Yeah, I get that. You know what? The problem we've got with the post office is they've really become, to some degree, archaic. They're being replaced by technology. And they say, yes, they've got 2 billion fewer pieces. Well, where are they? Been replaced. The 2 billion pieces of mail have been replaced by probably 100 billion pieces of email, and it might be a trillion pieces of email. I don't know how much email gets sent around, but at least when people had to lick stamps, you didn't get that many letters. Now you get email, pouring in an avalanche of email every day. They're being replaced by technology, and that's a problem for them, and what are they going to do? The only thing we can't ship by email right now are actual packages, which means FedEx and UPS, they're the ones that the post office is left to compete with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where the mail is going to go through digitally in most instances. There'll be legal documents and, you know, important documents that have to be moved, but they'll be handled by ultimately like packages. You'll put them in a special package with UPS, FedEx, maybe the post office, but it won't be less mail in the sense of getting a note from mom or grandma or somebody. It'll be more documents that have significant value. They may move through the mail, packages, the rest of it, email. So they're facing, they have a technological problem. They've become outdated to some degree, and that's part of the reason they're having a problem. Not the only reason, but it's part of it.
And once 3D printers are affordable to everyone and everything can get printed off the internet, no one will need UPS or FedEx either.
No, they'll still, because they won't be able to print
they'll have to deliver
coins.
The printers.
They won't be able to print gold coins,
that's right.
They still haven't got to that, where you can get little wires of gold or silver, and you can make your own $20 liberties and Morgan dollars. And that hasn't happened yet. That's going to be a while. That's in our future somewhere, but not today.
I'm glad it's not in my future, but anyway. All righty. What's next, Alfred?
Now we've got an article here from Casey Daily Dispatch. That's Doug Casey's publication. And the title on it is Forgotten Sado Monetarists. Now, just as an introduction to the article, there's something wrong with the Nobel Prize Committee in Stockholm. They've issued Nobel Prizes to former Vice President Al Gore for making a PowerPoint presentation on global warming. They gave another one to President Obama for being black. And they gave one to Paul Krugman for economics. Now, it's hard to say which of these Nobel Prizes is more ridiculous. You might think that the Nobel Prize given to Mr. Krugman for economics makes some sense since, after all, Mr. Krugman does have a PhD in economics. But judging from Mr. Krugman's recent comments, a column he put out, it's beginning to appear that Mr. Krugman has bought his PhD from some online university. For example, here's what Casey Daily Dispatch reports about Mr. Krugman's recent column. They say if you favor sound money, you're a Sado monetarist. All right? According to the New York Times columnist Paul Krugman, the Nobel Prize winner says he doesn't use the term, and we're talking about Sado monetarist. He doesn't use the term just to be colorful. No, he uses the term advisedly and defines it as an attitude common among monetary officials and commentators that involves a visceral dislike for low interest rates and easy money, even when unemployment is high and inflation is low. So if you people have any complaints about low interest rates, if you don't like easy money, then you're a Sado monetarist, new term coined by Mr. Krugman. I am, according to his definition or his description, I am apparently a Sado monetarist. I have a visceral dislike, but it's not for low interest rates and easy money. My visceral dislike is for robbing creditors and also for telling lies. When we have a low interest rate, it necessarily means that we are robbing creditors. They're not getting a fair return. They have earned money. They have saved money. And now we want to be able to borrow it at such a low interest rate that the creditors don't get a return. They may even take a loss after you calculate for inflation. It's theft. There's my visceral dislike for the fiat monetary system and what the Federal Reserve is doing. All right? I don't like the theft, and I don't like the lies that are inherent in this system. My visceral dislike for fiat currency is based on the very high probability that our fiat monetary system has improperly and unreasonably expanded the size and power of the government to the detriment of the American people. Are we better off having big government? How do we get big government? We got it with fiat currency that the government could spin out of thin air. They could write all these checks, essentially, and never have to redeem them. They just keep going deeper and deeper into debt and spinning more currency. The result has been a monster government, the beginning of a police state in this country, and from my perspective, all of that can go back to this fiat monetary system that's been advanced by the Federal Reserve and so on. My visceral dislike for fiat currency is based on the fact that fiat currency is prohibited, expressly prohibited by Article 1, Section 10, Clause 1 of the Constitution of the United States, which says no state shall make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debts. We have to have gold and silver coin constitutionally. We have to have it. Where is it? We don't have it. We're acting in violation of the Constitution. And if you object to that, according to Mr. Krugman, you're a sadomonetarist. My visceral dislike for fiat currency is based on the fact that all fiat currencies fail. Our fiat dollar will eventually collapse, and maybe not so long from now. And when it does, our economy and perhaps even our nation will drift into chaos and possible, it's not likely, but possible political disintegration. So if I'm a sadomonetarist, then it follows that Paul Krugman and those who believe his claptrap are masso-monetarists who have a visceral desire to rob creditors, lie, destroy the American dream and the American economy, and cause an economic collapse and possible national disintegration. These masso-monetarists are guilty of levying war against the United States of America and thus guilty of treason. I don't know exactly what the Nobel Prize Committee is guilty of, but somebody's got to make them stop issuing Nobel Prizes to morons. All right? Paul Krugman says he's happy that sadomonetarists have little influence on the Federal Reserve, but they do constantly harass the Fed, demanding that it stop its efforts to boost employment. The great Fed is here to save us, according to Mr. Krugman. But instead of relying on the Fed to save us, how about getting the government to stop allowing and encouraging illegal aliens to enter this country and take some of our jobs? How about we stop shipping our industries and jobs to foreign countries in the name of global free trade and low tariffs? Why does the Federal Reserve have to boost employment? Why shouldn't governments, the government, our government, be stopped from reducing employment? We're not having an unemployment problem because of the Federal Reserve. We're having an unemployment problem because the government is allowing illegal aliens to enter and take jobs, and they're shipping some jobs overseas, not to the same degree they were 5 years, 10 years ago, but they've moved jobs and industries overseas. Finally, why should we care about protecting the Federal Reserve's ability to protect our jobs? I mean, how effective have those efforts been over the past 6 years? Has the Federal Reserve really protected us? And if not, why is Mr. Krugman defending the Federal Reserve? Why is Mr. Krugman accusing people who want nothing more than sound money, an economy based on truth rather than lies, and saying those are sadomonetarists? Why is he doing this? The whole thing is nuts. But he's got a PhD, so what can I tell you? What do you think, Melody? Crazy or not crazy or half crazy?
Well, of course, it's disastrous. And now we have, you know, when we talk about, you know, global free trade, you know, we have Obama off jetting the Asian countries to further promote additional trade agreements.
Stirring the pot a little bit between China and Japan also.
Yeah, see, you know, he's there to supposedly protect those islands and so forth, but he's doing the, you know, he's doing the stomping grounds to promote the trade agreement. That is the main focus, I believe, for the trip. So,
if Japan didn't have enough trouble with Fukushima, now they've got Obama trying to settle the conflict with China. I mean, this is not a formula for success. Understand? Hooray! Hooray! President Obama's coming to save us.
He went to, where did he go? Manila. And he wasn't very welcome there. There was many protests. They turned fire hoses on folks. And there was only 100. And that's not a lot of people. And they called them left-wing activists, who rallied at the U.S. Embassy in Manila today to oppose a visit by Obama. And
it's interesting because Obama's perceived in this country as being a left-wing activist. Now they've got left-wing activists in Manila rallying to protest the left-wing activist coming from America.
But he also went to Japan. But there are signs going back there. They carried U.S. flags with the message, "Obama not welcome." He landed in Japan today. He's scheduled to visit South Korea, Malaysia, the Philippines over the next 5 days as a wider attempt to rebalance and pivot towards Asia.
Yeah, well, good luck with that. I don't know. You know.
But these agreements will be done and more will be given and more jobs will be lost. And I'm sure any agreements that come about from his trips to these areas certainly will not be in the best interest of the American people. The American people need to protect and get ready themselves. They must plan for the worst case scenario. They must plan and be ready for basically anything.
You know, and no one can be ready for anything. You just have to do the best you can with what you've got, because no one knows exactly what's going to happen. No one can absolutely predict what's going to happen. And no matter how it works out, none of us are really smart enough to do more than increase the probability that we're going to get along okay in the future. Right? We can all increase that probability, but there's never an absolute guarantee. The guarantee seems to be, you look around and you see how much trouble they have at the Ukraine, and now maybe something coming up between Japan and China. And you look at the instability that's growing more and more around the world. You wonder when we're going to see our next episode of something like the Arab Spring. You wonder how long the dollar is going to hold together. What are you going to do? It's just sensible to get yourself a life preserver and stay close to the lifeboats, and most of them are made out of gold or silver. We'll take a break for some commercial announcements. Be back in a moment. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from ABR. The ABR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Got an article from the New York Times. Says the American middle class is no longer the world's richest. The American middle class, long the most affluent in the world, has lost that distinction. While the wealthiest Americans are outpacing many of their global peers, the New York Times analysis shows that across the lower and middle income tiers, citizens of other advanced countries have received considerably larger raises over the past three decades. Pay attention to the timing on this. We're talking about three decades. That's the beginning, and we'll get a little deeper into that in a moment. After tax, middle-class incomes in Canada, substantially behind in 2000, now appear to be higher than in the United States. The poor in much of Europe earned more than poor Americans. The numbers, based on surveys conducted over the past 35 years, offer some of the most detailed publicly available comparisons for different income groups in different countries over time. They suggest that most American families are paying a steep price for high and rising income inequality. Is that what's getting us? Is it income inequality? Is that what's actually finishing us off? The data they're referring to goes back to 1979. They say 35 years. That's as far as they can trace the data back. We're losing ground over the course of the last 35 years. I'm going to suggest that the cause of our falling incomes can be traced to 1971, 8 years earlier than their data. All right, go back 43 years. And that's when the dollar became a pure fiat currency and unleashed the government to grow dramatically in terms of size and regulatory powers. All right? And these are data that are collected from a European source. They are evidence that something is going wrong here. And the people that you folks are trusting to protect you cannot be relied on to protect you. Your interests have by and large been sacrificed. And we can embrace any number of conspiracy theories as to who are they being sacrificed to? The ultra-rich, the top 0.1%, the top 1%, global free trade, multinational corporations, fill in the blanks, who's responsible? The one thing we know is our incomes have stagnated. Huh? And it cannot have happened without the complicity of your congressman, your senator, your president, your government. One way or another, this is a significant trend. It's been going on for several decades, and we don't see that there's going to be a change anytime soon. And it won't be a change as long as we continue to trust everyone who gets elected to Congress because they look like they've come from central casting in Hollywood. Somewhere along the line, we have to start electing politicians who actually don't just talk about doing right for the American people, but they actually do it. They fight for it.
First, we need to become involved in finding those people and supporting those people and or becoming involved ourselves.
Yeah.
I mean,
a couple of times. I never expected to get elected, but I've run a few times. Ran for the Supreme Court of Texas back in 1992, and that's supposed to be illegal. I got 201,000 votes. That's more votes than a lot of people get when they run for president, third-party candidates for president. One of them recently received 175,000 out of the whole country. I got 201 out of Texas, which is either a tribute to me or an indictment for the people of Texas. It's hard to say.
Next Wednesday, we have Phil Hudak on. He's running for West Virginia senator. Rockefeller is retiring out of that state, and he's on the Constitution Party, and he's going to talk about his campaign, and talk about the country. And so make sure you got folks tune in next Wednesday. He'll be here from the second segment of the program till the end of the show. So
okay.
That's what we need to do, Al. I mean, we need to be involved. We need to run for the offices. We need to do what you did. We need to do what Phil did.
Well, you need to stop trusting these people in Washington because it's clear they are not representing the best interests of the vast majority of the American people.
We stopped.
And I doubt that anyone can make a serious objection to that statement.
We stopped picking up the phones and calling. We stopped writing. We stopped voting. We stopped doing all these things because then we're constantly being told it doesn't make a difference. So we just stopped doing it.
Well, it's not just that we stopped doing it. We became complacent and we put up with whatever government wanted to do. And, you know, one of the biggest mistakes we've ever possibly made is we've allowed the government to run up an incredible national debt. They admit to it being over $17 trillion. John Williams says it's nearly $90 trillion. Congressional Budget Office says, including unfunded liabilities, it's over $200 trillion. We have had the bizarre and clearly irrational idea that no matter how great the debt grew, we could always pay it off. We're Americans. We can pay that debt. No matter how big it gets, we can handle it. No, we can't. That debt's not going to be paid. And the consequences of that repudiation of the debt, and it'll be repudiated either openly, they say, sorry, boys, we can't pay the debt, or they will repudiate by means of inflation or even hyperinflation. But the debt's going to be repudiated, can't be paid. That incredible assumption that we've entertained, that no matter what happens, we could pay the debt. It's simply false. It's irrational, and we're going to pay for that. So this is one of the things. We not only have to pick up the phone and send email and letters and whatever else to our congressmen, senators, presidents, and get active. Join groups. Protest. You got to get involved and make your presence felt. It can be made to happen. You know, you look at Cliven Bundy, most of you have heard about him. That man stood up and faced off the government for 20 years, and he has made a difference. It's not an impossible task. You can fight City Hall. I'm not arguing that it's easy, but it can be done, particularly in this climate where almost a majority of people agree that the government is not to be trusted. A majority of people are dissatisfied with government. This is the kind of climate that opens the door for people who want to run for office and say, look, we need to do something. We need to go in a different direction. and I don't believe we're going to get it from the Republicans, and I don't believe we're going to get it from the Democrats. We may get some talk about it, but their history indicates that, final analysis, they're not there to do us any good. Well, what's next, Melody?
Here's an interesting number I didn't realize. You know, we talked about Target, their credit card breaches, and so forth. Personally, I believe these are all inside jobs. I mean, it's just my own personal opinion. But I saw an article today where they were talking about the cashless society, how close we are, the future of our payments. Very few people use, even businesses that used to rely heavily on cash. No longer. They have technology today that they can, you know, swipe things. And now even though we think Bitcoin is going to be is it going to be around even 10 years from now? It opens the door for more things like Bitcoin to come along and to accept and usher in a true cashless society. So that is becoming, this cashless economy is becoming more apparent. And we've had breaches at various retail facilities, Target, and even Marcus, and, you know, there's a ton of other ones, Sears, Penny's, whatever. So you have the vulnerability. This is the numbers that I couldn't believe. There were 2,164 reported security incidents exposing 822 million records last year, nearly doubling the previous highest year of 2011. And the pace is continuing into this year. That's almost a billion records last year.
Mm-hmm.
And the push, of course, they have an answer for this, and it's called chip and PIN cards. It's been in use for Europe for several years, and it would remove some of the threat of the exposure. You have computer chips that are embedded in cards and identification numbers that consumers would, you know, punch into the terminals. It would help reduce fraud. But again, you know, you're also losing your privacy and so forth. And, you know, everybody talks about a cashless society. We've been talking about cashless society for years and years and years. But I didn't realize that number was so big.
It's enormous. And how can you be secure with anything digital? I mean, that's the lesson here. They say, oh, we've got new security features and the rest of that. You can't take something that costs virtually nothing to manufacture, like a zero and a one on a computer hard drive, or even a piece of paper, like a $100 bill with some ink on it and a plastic strip and so on. You can't take something that costs a nickel at most to make and price it out at $100 and act surprised when you find out people are counterfeiting that. You can't have a digital currency and say, oh, we're going to have a new security arrangements and procedures and you'll be safe. You are never going to be safe with a digital currency. Never. I guarantee no matter who comes up with a security system, somebody is going to find a way to crack through it. They are going to hack through it, crack through it. They're going to break through it, and they are going to rob your currency. And if they don't have to hack, break, or if they don't have to hack or break into your account, private people, the government will. All of those digital forms of currency are easily accessible to being robbed. And Melody's talking about we're over 800 million files that were
Breached
in this last, year? So, however?
Last year.
Yeah.
And it's worse this year.
I don't know how many files are out there. How many files, Melody? Do you have any idea if there are 800 billion, no, million that were breached? How many files are there altogether? It would be interesting to know how many were not breached. Right? It may be that 80% of the files that are available have been breached. Maybe it's only 20% or 10%. I don't know what the number is. But we're moving, I guarantee we're headed toward a time when we will see a majority of the files breached. And whatever those files are supposedly protecting in terms of your wealth and whatever will be placed in jeopardy. In the final analysis, you can't have a monetary system that's based on paper because it's easy to counterfeit paper. No matter how much fancy stuff you put on it, if you can manufacture it for a nickel a piece and sell it for $100 a piece, guess what? People are going to figure out how to counterfeit it. And when you get into digital ones and zeros on a hard drive, put all your security arrangements up, and guess what? People are going to figure out how to crack in and steal that apparent wealth. Now, there's always thieves running around looking to steal tangible wealth in the form of gold and silver, but it's a lot harder to steal. You're going to steal somebody, say, let's break into this guy's house and steal some gold. Well, what's the first thing you can figure? The guy's got gold. He's probably also got lead in the form of bullets. And he will defend that gold. Where? You can get yourself a computer, learn how to hack into some of these files, or even buy them. Then once they breach all these files, they make them available for people to buy on the internet. Why risk being shot to steal someone's gold when you can go up safely on the internet, download some files, and buy some new stuff from Amazon.com or whoever? There is no guarantee. There's no absolute security in this world. That's just the nature of life. But there are some things that are substantially more risky than others. And any of your digital, and you're storing your wealth in the form of paper or electronic digits, and you are assuming a certain amount of risk that is greater than any risk you're going to assume by acquiring gold and silver and selling and saving your wealth in that form. So here we are, Melody. How many people do you suppose are going to have their accounts hacked before somebody says, maybe I don't want a cashless society? Because a cashless society will ultimately mean no privacy, no financial privacy for sure, and no financial security. On the other hand, if you've got some cash, got some gold, got some silver, you know, bury it in the backyard, stick it up in the attic, hide it under your bed, do what you want with it. You got something that people can't easily rob. I'm Alfred Adisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We are done for today. Hope you will come back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank the piano player. Bye-bye.